Welcome to On The Money, where you can find out anything and everything to do with finance, business and the economy. On The Money is broadcast live from the studios of Radio 2 SER nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Roderick Chambers, and coming up on the program...
Instead of needing to give you my BSBN account number if I wanted to have money transferred to my account, say if we were splitting a restaurant bill or you were paying me back for theatre tickets, I can link my mobile number or my email account to my bank account, and then that becomes my pay ID. I give you the pay ID, and that's all you need to know to have the money come through to my account.
Ever wondered why banks can take money out of your account so quickly? Yet when you need to transfer money, they tell you it will take 3 to 4 days to take effect. Do they in fact make money whilst your account remains updated? Almost certainly. But all this is about to change with a new payment system platform, cleverly dubbed the NPP. This will make money transfers almost instantaneous, giving you the access to your money that you always should have had. CBA, Westpac, CUA and NAB are on board with the platform, but all financial institutions should be using it very soon. Also on the show...
So you can have just as much freedom as you would have with your own vehicle, where you push a button on your phone and the car comes up within just a couple minutes and takes you exactly where you want to go. That car ownership starts to go down. We've already seen this in the States, where areas with a high penetration of Uber have lower new car purchases.
We take a look at the race to get driverless vehicles in Australia. We should see Lyft, a competitor to Uber, in Australia very soon. And these two operators are vying with the likes of Elon Musk, Google and General Motors to be first into the driverless transport phenomenon, which is closer than we think. All this and more coming up on The Money. But first, research by Australian financial website finder.com.au has found that Australians have been scammed out of $89 billion throughout 2017. Technology has evolved in such a way that our personal and financial information can be found in many different places, such as our phones, bank cards, apps and websites. As a result, all of these have been targeted by scammers to get to your hard-earned cash. Kevin Suarez spoke to finder.com.au's Sally McMullen about who were most susceptible to scams in 2017 and how to keep your money safe this year.
Who are more likely to be scammed in 2017?
Well, in 2017, Aussies in general were scammed out of more than $89 million. But out of that, perhaps unsurprisingly, some of our older Aussies were most likely to be caught out by the scam. So Australians aged between 55 and 64 were the most likely, and they had an accumulated scamming loss of more than $21 million, which is massive, and then shortly followed by Aussies over 65. So I think that it probably doesn't come as much of a shock that some of the older Aussies are maybe a little bit more susceptible to some of these scams, just because a lot of them are coming in, you know, via email and text messages and things like that. But what I actually thought was quite surprising is that millennials, so people aged between 25 to 34, actually had the biggest jump. I think it was 30% year on year for scam complaints, which is interesting.
Was there any particular reason why millennials had this increase in being scammed?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually no one reason that we can really pinpoint across the board why, you know, scams are at a record high at the moment. I think maybe in terms of millennials, it's just that we're becoming more and more reliant on using digital technology to make payments, and thus making or leaving, I guess, like a digital footprint of our financial transactions.
What was the most common scam?
Okay, so the biggest chunk of this went to dodgy investment scams, actually, which accounted for 35% of all of the stolen money, which added up to around $31 million in total, which is massive. But also one of the biggest traps were social media scams. So we saw over 4,700 Australians lose an average of around $3,300 to scams on social media, which is also up 66% from the previous year, which is pretty crazy.
So on social media, I'm used to looking at pictures of cats and of family members. So how do people end up getting scammed on social media?
Well, I guess it varies from case to case, but, you know, especially at this time of year, you know, there's a lot of noise about romance scams which come through social media. So, you know, obviously a bit of a catfishing situation there. And then we've even heard of, you know, LinkedIn scams, so people connecting with you and posing as a professional connection on LinkedIn and, yeah, getting scammed that way.
So we all know of the classic scams such as the Nigerian prince and the Spanish prisoner, but are there any scams that the public may not be as aware about, such as scams that only really developed last year?
Yeah, so I think some of these strategies that scammers are using aren't necessarily new, but just they're becoming more sophisticated. So I know personally I've had plenty of emails come through, and at first glance I actually think it is an email from my telco provider or my bank, but it's when you have a closer look at the email that you realize, you know, oh, okay, you know, there wasn't a fraudulent transaction made on my account. You know, when you look at, say, the email address that's being sent to you, if you pay attention to that, often you'll see that it might be a really long email address, or it, you know, just isn't the same as the email address that you usually would receive from your telco provider or your bank or whoever it is. Another way that you can spot some of these email scams is things as, you know, easy as grammatical errors or even overly formal, you know, sort of wording in emails. So, yeah, I would say those. Also, there's been a bit of a spike in some, even just things like phone calls and text messages. So if you get a text message or a phone call from an unknown number, especially if it's from overseas, it's definitely best to just ignore it.
Yes, I've heard that the overseas phone call scam is started becoming a little bit more known towards the end of last year. So could you give us a little brief summary on how that works?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, even just from a personal experience last week, I had two calls from Belgium, and I don't know anyone in Belgium. And then so I saw the number, obviously didn't answer, Googled it, and had found on a bunch of forums people were also asking similar questions, getting missed calls from these numbers. And with this particular case, they were calling, and then I believe you'd pick up and they'd hang up straight away so that you would call them back. And then when you called them back, you would be charged, it was like $15 a minute or something for, you know, as it was ringing back.
So you were speaking earlier about how to protect ourselves when we were getting a couple of suspicious emails, but just in general, what's the best way to avoid getting scammed?
So I think just across the board, you just need to be vigilant. And I know that seems like, you know, pretty common sense piece of advice, but when you're flicking through your email, and we get so many emails from everywhere these days, it's easy to, you know, miss something that might be a little bit dodgy. So I think, yeah, just looking out for, say, for example, if you receive, you know, a notification that you've purchased something on the App Store and you know you haven't, before you click on that link, you know, that asks you to, you know, I guess, qualify your password or reset your account or something like that, make sure that you look out for some of those key triggers. So the email address, use of grammar, and even the tone of the language, look out for the logos and anything suspicious where it doesn't have any specific details around the transaction that you apparently made, but then has a big link, you know, asking you to, yeah, reset your account or confirm your credit card details or something like that. Another tip, especially if you're doing a lot of online shopping, which a lot of us are, look out for websites that have the HTTPS in the URL, and some of them will also have a padlock as well. So before you put in your details to make a purchase, look out for that, because that just means that the website is encrypted and therefore it's harder for scammers to hack and get your details. And I guess that would go the same for text messages as well, you know, looking out for if it's coming from an odd number that isn't the number that you usually would receive communications from, say, your bank or whoever it may be. The best idea, if you, you know, have any sort of misgivings that it might be, you know, something dodgy, just give your bank or provider a call. That's just the easiest way. Yeah, don't click on any of the links or you know, call the numbers. So obviously this is all good advice for, you know, when we're living and existing in the digital space. But I think as well, it's just good to be mindful of even shopping in store, because that was still quite a common way that people were being scammed in 2017. So you know, if you go into a bit of a dodgy-looking convenience store and the ATM's broken and they're saying you can withdraw cash, you know, and they can do it under the counter for you, just don't, you know, walk away, try and find another ATM somewhere else. And another one, actually, is avoid making transactions when you're using, like, a public computer. If you're at, like, you know, the uni library or something like that and you're using public Wi-Fi at a mall, because scammers are more likely to target people who are using those less protected Wi-Fi. Instead, maybe wait until you go home and you're using a secure Wi-Fi to make those transactions.
Okay, and so one final question. If we do get scammed, what is our best course of action, if there even is any?
So I guess the best thing to do, if you have any sort of idea or, you know, suspicion that something's gone wrong, contact the provider, or, you know, whether it's your bank, telco, Apple, whoever it is, to chase it up. Another good way to, I guess, stay on top of it is making sure that you're always keeping track of your transaction history, which I think is easier than ever now that, you know, we have online banking, and often your transactions are displayed in your history online almost immediately after you've made a purchase. So even like at the end of every day, if you just quickly go through your transaction history on your banking app, that's one way that you can maybe pick up on some suspicious activity if there is any. And then, yeah, that's when you give your bank a call straight away. Most of these institutions have, you know, 24/7 customer service that you can call in the case of emergency. So don't wait. As soon as you find out, contact straight away. And then the next step beyond that would be contacting the ACCC. So it was the ACCC that actually received, you know, more than 160,000 reported scam complaints from Aussies in 2017. And yeah, they're the consumer body that I suppose chases these sorts of issues up and hopefully can help you get your money back if you were caught out.
Finder.com.au's Sally McMullen ending that report by Kevin Suarez. You're listening to On The Money, finding out everything to do with money, finance and business. And we're broadcasting around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Radio 2SER in Sydney. I'm Roderick Chambers. Well, Elon Musk is already powering lights up in South Australia and has recently sent one of his Tesla electric cars into space. But what else does he and other futurist thinkers have in store for us? Silicon Valley-based Singularity University focuses on exponentially accelerating technologies, and next week they're hosting a Singularity Summit in Sydney. I asked Director of Singularity University, Kyla Coleman, what the technology would look like that could be underpinning the next wave of technology in cars and transport.
Yeah, I mean, really what we're seeing in transportation is the convergence of three different vectors simultaneously. So one is the shift from petrol-powered vehicles to electric vehicles. Two is the shift from human-powered vehicles to autonomous vehicles. And three is the shift away from vehicle ownership and towards what we call transportation as a service. So think about accessing something like Uber, where you don't own the car, you push a button on your phone and the car comes to get you.
Of course, one of the things about cars is it's kind of the independence, and when you first get your license, it's something that, you know, there's a freedom involved in it. How are we going to feel if we lose that?
Yeah, it's interesting because that's something, there are a lot of things that we have a sort of historic, iconic association with, right? So oftentimes when I give my presentations, I'll get someone who says, but I really love to drive. And the question I always ask is, when you imagine yourself driving and loving it, what are you picturing? And typically what we're picturing is, you know, driving on a windy mountain road in a convertible with the top down on a blue sky day. And we're not typically picturing our commute to work, right? So one of the things that we've seen is that actually if the transportation as a service model is robust enough that you can have just as much freedom as you would have with your own vehicle, where you push a button on your phone and the car comes up within just a couple minutes and takes you exactly where you want to go, that car ownership starts to go down. We've already seen this in the States, where areas with a high penetration of Uber have lower new car purchases.
What happens, though? I mean, like, if you're looking at mass transportation, you'd think that trains would be the most obvious thing that you could, you should be able to automate. I think there's a big hurdle you have to get over there to feel safe. You want someone there in charge, don't you? How are we going to get over that sort of feeling in mass transportation?
You know, I had this experience a few years ago where I did a BMW driving event where they put you in a car and they were showing a service that they have called automatic descent control, which is you press a button and even no matter how steep a hill you're pointing down, you're not going to get out of control. And so I'm in this car, and they drove us up a track that where, you know, I'm sitting in the car, and I'm basically looking at the sky. It's that steep. And they press this button, and they're like, now we're going to let go. And I'm like, ah, it feels like a roller coaster. And they let go, and you just sort of crawl back down. It's completely anticlimactic. And my expectation is that that's what we're going to experience with autonomous vehicles. Right now, we have a bit of a, oh, is it really okay for the robots to drive? About 2 minutes after you get in the car, you're going to completely forget that there's nobody driving.
Now, just thinking with some of the long-haul trucks and so forth, we have a lot of road trains where you've got a number of long trailers attached to one prime mover. Going in the outback with those, there'd have to be some sort of mechanism to stop them. One of the things we have problems with on our roads here is kangaroos, and cows and things like that, which are crossing the road. So would they stop automatically for those sorts of animals?
Yeah, it's actually a big issue with developing autonomous vehicles for Australia. They're struggling with the image identification. But each of these issues, kangaroos or cows, I live in New Zealand, so we've got lots of cows. Each of these issues is a technical problem that is well on its way to being solved. And so absolutely the general idea is that it'll stop automatically for any of these animals. One of the things we also see is that what we can have is not necessarily full automation, but we might have a whole series of trucks, let's say 5 or 10 trucks. The front truck is driven by a human, and all the other trucks are calibrated to follow the truck in front of them.
Oh, I see. Because I was thinking, if it's going to automatically stop, then wouldn't that be good for robbers and highwaymen, and they could stop these big road trains and unhitch things and then drive off into the sunset?
Yeah, these are absolutely things that need to be thought of. But one of the things we'll be talking about at our summit next week is this idea of putting assets on the blockchain. There's a company in Australia called Everledger who's doing phenomenal work putting high-value assets on the blockchain and making it so that they're so much easier to be tracked, and it's much, much harder to fence them, to move them on the black market.
When you're talking about Lyft and Uber earlier, I remember seeing an article that there is a big race on, and they were saying whoever masters this first is going to be, you know, the master of the ride sharing universe. Is that your assessment of it?
Absolutely, and it's not just Lyft and Uber who are thinking about it, right? Tesla is—that's Tesla's ultimate intention—is to be providing, kind of like Apple doesn't just provide a phone or a computer; they also provide iTunes and the entire platform for all the developers to plug in. Tesla is doing a similar thing. They're looking to provide not only the vehicle, but also the platform for all the ride-sharing participation to happen. And it's one of the reasons that I'm so convinced that this technology is coming faster than we can imagine, because if you think about what drives technology, it's if you don't get it right, so if Lyft, you know, if Uber gets autonomous vehicles before Lyft does, then Uber wins and Lyft loses. So there's a huge benefit to Uber and a huge disincentive for Lyft. So everybody's investing like crazy in it.
Kyla Colbin there from Singularity University, ending that report. You're listening to On the Money around Australia on the Community Radio Network. I'm Roderick Chambers. Well, the financial services industry and federal government have been working on a new payment platform, the NPP, since early 2012. This billion-dollar platform is going to be underpinning Australia's payment system, and it's been set to go live this week. The NPP works directly between banks so that they can send payment messages in real time to each other and the Reserve Bank. OSCO is one of the things which we'll see first off. This is going to replace BPAY, and it's the first overlay of the system. Vincent Su asked Nathan Churchwood, Senior Manager of Payment Products at Cuscal, just what the benefits could be for the new payments platform.
The clear one is speed, and I think that most people, and me included, have always thought, why can't the payment go immediately? So the obvious one people will see is that payments now can be processed between participating banks straight away. The other one, though, is the introduction of PayID, which means that instead of needing to give you my BSBN account number if I wanted to have money transferred to my account, say if we were splitting a restaurant bill or you're paying me back for theatre tickets, I can link my mobile number or my email account to my bank account, and then that becomes my PayID. I give you the PayID, and that's all you need to know to have the money come through to my account.
So it sounds like a very fantastic system once it launches. So how long did it take to make this new payments platform?
been probably 5 years in the making and about 3 years in the building. There was a lot of planning and discovery and assessment that went on first, and then around 3 years ago, the build and the tests and all those development activities started in earnest. And it was project teams working across the 10 connected institutions that are going live on day one to ensure they built all of the compatible infrastructure to enable these transactions to pass in real time between all of those banks. In parallel to that, we were building a Cuscal capability that the financial institutions that connect through us were also then able to do that. And so they've been doing their build for the last 12 to 18 months, leveraging off the work that we've been able to do.
So one of the benefits you mentioned was instant bank transfers. So what does instant bank transfers mean for customers?
So I bank with Bank Australia, and so now when I go onto my Bank Australia mobile app, instead of having to put in the BSBN account number, I can put in a Pay ID, and that will do the lookup of the Pay ID through to, say, a Commonwealth Bank account, if that's the account that is linked in behind the Pay ID that I've entered. That will confirm who the money is going to, so I've got the certainty of money that's not going somewhere that's not verified, and that will then transfer between my account and the person I wish to transfer money to, generally in under 15 seconds. That's the benchmark that we've all built our systems towards to ensure that we can do that transfer in less than 15 seconds in 99% of the cases.
So how do you link...
How do you do it? Okay, so what I've done to enable my Pay ID at my bank is I've gone into mobile banking, I've selected the Create Pay ID function. That's then used my mobile number and the account that I've got available at that bank. I've chosen which account I want to link to my Pay ID. I've received an SMS to confirm that I've got access to that mobile number, and then the bank has said that, okay, we've confirmed that you can create this Pay ID. Here is the name that we're going to associate with that Pay ID, so it comes up as in Churchward, so that then it's active, live, I can give you my Pay ID, you'll send me money, it'll confirm that it's going to in Churchward, and we both have confidence that the system is going to support that money going between our two accounts.
And you can change the links in terms of mobile phone numbers and bank accounts, right?
That's true. So if I was to move to a different bank, I'd be able to have my Pay ID go into a transfer status, so then I can link it at the new bank. But the good thing about having that security of actively having to put it into that transfer status is someone can't come along and then register my mobile number to their account. It has to be me in control of that. So definitely would encourage everyone to have confidence that there's a lot of protections and the security mechanisms that have been built around the solution, but also the convenience that if you do get a new mobile number, you can very easily go to your bank and put a different mobile number onto the account, or if you do transfer banks, you've got the ability to move those over.
Yeah, so
the other benefit is that it's not just about mobile numbers, it's also an email address. So I saw some social media on the weekend with people saying, I've got two bank accounts. How do I have a Pay ID with those two accounts? And I can easily have that through having my mobile number on one bank and my email address on the other.
Yeah, so I understand that the MPP is also being built, has also been built with third-party non-bank services in mind, or overlay services. So can you go through what the NPP means for companies that want to leverage and be an overlay service, say fintech companies and stuff like that?
So the concept of overlay services moves beyond the pure payment, because the pure payment is very much still within the banking domain, but the information that is carried with that payment enables functionality that you can then get, make it more more detailed. So, for example, the first overlay service is called OSCO, and that's being managed by BPAY. And that means that it is now going to be as easy and as well known to make a payment between two people's bank accounts as it is to make a BPAY payment. BPAY have applied a lot of the learnings and the structures and the protections and the promotion that they've all that they've learnt about with BPAY to the concept of person-to-person payments from two bank accounts. So that's the type of product that we'll see come out from other providers, whether it be to do with payments, whether it could be to do with various property purchases or other transactions and services where the data is just as important as the payment, and we want to marry those up and create business rules that ensure that that happens. That's what overlays are about.
When will we be able to start making instant bank transfers with our pay IDs?
It will roll out to different banks over different times. So I think there'll be, I'd say that the ramp-up period, the best way to look at that is to go to your bank's website and look at what their implementation schedule is, so that you know when you'll be able to both receive and send, because it will be a period of time where that will be different between different banks. Well, as soon as someone is active on both sides of the transaction, you'll get that guaranteed fast payment through OSCO and the simplicity of the pay ID, but it will take a little bit of time before everybody has everything available.
Nathan Churchward there, Senior Manager of Payment Products at Cuscal, ending that report by Vincent Su. That's all we have time for on the Money this week. We hope you'll tune in again next week to find out everything you need to know about money, finance and business. Hello, if you're listening to Two Wet Tank FM in Kempsey, Two Bob Radio in Taree, or Alpine Radio 96.5 in the Victorian Alps. Thanks to producers Kevin Suarez and Vincent Su. On the Money is produced in the studios of Radio 2 SER for the Community Radio Network. You can find all of our shows at 2ser.com/onthemoney. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. Look for at onthemoney2ser and find us on Facebook. Don't forget to ask us some questions on Twitter. I'm Roderick Chambers. We'll be back again next week to give the inside running on all things financial. Thanks for your company.
Cult Film Classics returns to Event Cinemas George Street February 16th with the comedy Beyond Belief, Raising Arizona. Nicolas Cage and Holly Hunter's lawless years are behind them. Their child-rearing years lie ahead.
Got a name, does he?
So far, we've just been using Junior.
We call him Junior.
Hosted by Channel 7's Jabba and Quinny from Supernova. Check the full film list and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street sponsors 2SER 107.3.